Mr. Robertson, today we had a plane crash in New York City. We don't know the cause yet, but what do you think? Is this a bad sign in this today's situation?
I think this is obviously a terrible disaster for the people who have been lost, for the people who will have been killed. At the moment, we still don't know what has caused this disaster to take place, but I think the first thing we should do is express our thoughts for the people who have been affected, their families, their friends, and to find out as quickly as possible what was the cause of such a disaster.
And we go further. How the terrorist attacks in the US changed the nature of NATO? I mean, the terrorist attacks on September.
I think what happened on September the 11th has changed the world. It has changed all of our lives because we now have a completely different threat to deal with. In addition to all the existing threats and challenges we faced, we've now got international terrorism using these deplorable and dreadful ways of killing vast numbers of innocent civilians. And what that means now is that we've got to be ready for these challenges. We first of all have to deal with those who committed these grave crimes, bring them to justice, deter others from doing the same. But we've also got to be able to give reassurance to populations who are now frightened and have reason to be frightened, and make sure that our defences, both civil and military, are ready to meet the new challenges. So that faces all of us.
Is NATO now stronger or weaker than before the attacks?
NATO is considerably stronger after these attacks. Firstly, because we invoked Article 5 of the Washington Treaty, that is the principle that an attack on one country is an attack on all of the countries. And that has made NATO much stronger in solidarity terms. Secondly, NATO has been involved in the operation that is happening here. We've been able to send NATO AWACS planes, for instance, to the United States of America for the first time ever, to defend the American homeland. And of course, a lot of other things have been done by NATO to help the American-led coalition at the present time. So I would say very firmly, and with evidence, that NATO is a much stronger organisation, and that we'll now take on our obligations to deal with the new challenges ahead.
Will these terrorist attacks have any impact on the process of NATO enlargement?
There will be no change to the process of NATO enlargement as a result of what happened on the 11th of September. In many ways, the logic of NATO's enlargement has become greater and stronger as a result of what happened. After all, enlargement is about bringing more countries into this European security family that NATO represents. So we will continue to be enthusiastic about enlargement, but heavily conditional about it as well, because an alliance that has now had this fresh injection of vitality and of constructive realism cannot afford to have passengers. So countries that want to join NATO have got to be able to join NATO and to contribute to NATO's strength as well.
As we know, there are 9 aspiring countries for NATO membership. How realistic are expectations of these countries that next year, the summit in Prague, there will be some new members of NATO?
Well, there will be at least one new member of NATO next year, because the presidents and prime ministers of NATO met in June of this year and decided that they would take the zero option off the table. That is the option that there would be no invitations. So they said there would be at least one. And probably there will be others as well on top of that. But they haven't gone beyond that at the moment, and neither should I, because there's still a year to go. There's still a year's performance to judge. There's still a year of the membership action plan to make a judgment on. And I don't expect that any firm decisions will be made right up until the edge of the conference in Prague.
How important was, for the enlargement, the decision of U.S. House of Representatives to support the enlargement and help candidate states with 55.5 million U.S. dollars.
Well, that wasn't really a very important decision at this stage. It was simply a snapshot of opinion. The House of Representatives and indeed the Senate have got to have much longer considerations of the decision that will eventually be taken. And I met the leaders of the two parties in the Senate when I was there last month, and they agreed with me, as did the President and the Secretary of State, that the policy on NATO enlargement is going to be enthusiasm but conditional. And that is going to represent the American point of view and indeed the point of view of the other 18 countries as well.
You've talked today with our political leaders. How good is Slovenia in meeting criteria for NATO membership? I mean, politically and militarily.
Both politically and militarily, Slovenia is working hard to be ready to get an invitation for NATO membership. The Minister of Defence is working very ambitiously on a plan to downsize the Slovenian armed forces so that they can be used much better, so that the elements of the armed forces that are simply a waste of money cease to exist, and that money is ploughed into the investment that will be required to make Slovenia's army much more effective than it is today. That's an ambitious programme, but already much progress has been made, and I've commended the government on that. The Prime Minister and the other members of the government have made it clear that the right finance will be available for military reform, because that is not only in the interests of the country's NATO application, it's the interests of the country itself. For example, if you've got an army that can't help in a civilian disaster like a forest fire or some floods, then the people of the country will rightly ask the question, why have we got so many soldiers? So as long as there is willpower and commitment, then the defence reforms will go ahead, and that will be good for NATO, and it will be good for Slovenia too. On the political side, I very much welcome the Slovenian commitment to democracy and democratic institutions, and obviously Slovenia is one of the most successful states in this region, and that is a good sign for the future.
What do you think, can Slovenia manage it to reform our army in 1 year?
Well, there's no way that Slovenia can reform the army in 1 year, and it would be unrealistic to expect that it would. What we have to have are plans that will allow these reforms to take place over a period, in this case up to the year 2010, appropriate finances to make sure that it happens, and enough results in the short term to show that the country means what it says. But we're not unrealistic in our demands on Slovenia or any of the other applicant countries. We've got to be realistic, and so have they. But the fact is that NATO membership for Slovenia is a very, very good thing and builds Slovenia into the democratic family of nations that NATO represents. But there is a very big entry fee, and that means reform of the armed forces as soon as possible.
What about defence expenditures? Are they high enough here in Slovenia?
The Slovenian government have promised that adequate money will be made available for the armed forces so that they can become good NATO allies. At the weekend, a further increase in the defence budget was made as a result of government decision making. So the disappointment there was last year when the defence budget was cut, I hope is going to be matched by much more optimism this coming year when the defence budget matches what is necessary. Defence spending is not money poured down a drain, it's investment in the security of Slovenia for the future, and therefore it's worth every penny that's spent.
Mr. Secretary General, thank you for the interview.
Pleasure.